Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of eDraft.com's Back 9 Report. We come online every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, along with recaps, previews, interviews. Hey, we talk anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvader, but this week, this Ryder Cup, captain's pick, so we got to get some balance on the European side. So we brought in our European guru, Kieran Clark. But let's start with Fred. Fred, hi, how are you today?
I am great, guys. Really excited. We had Chris Kirk staring down Rory McIlroy and other guys and getting the win at the Deutsche Bank in the FedEx Cup playoffs. And we know the European team, captain's picks, they came out this morning, and we just got to see that exciting television event with the Tom Watson presenting the U.S. picks, and I'm sure that's going to turn the tide now. We're going to kick Europe's ass, so let's go.
Oh, excited, pumped up after that short introduction that they were doing there, Kieran. So how about it? How are you today, Kieran?
Well, Carlos, I've just about woken up after watching the American Ryder Cup picks there. It was possibly the most tedious 40 minutes of television I've ever watched. Half the time I was thinking that Tom Watson was making it up as he went along. It was extraordinarily dull. It was overhyped. It's an absolute lot of nonsense. But anyway, we have our six picks from two captains now. Our teams are set. All 24 players are in position. Looking ahead to Glen Eagles, only 23 days away until all kicks off. I'm excited, so let's go.
Let's go, and let's start right away with those same picks. Team USA, Tom Watson, he revealed his picks, and there was no surprise, at least to anybody. I mean, everybody knew that Keegan Bradley, Hunter Mahan, and then it was a toss-up maybe between Webb Simpson and Chris Kirk, but it came down to Webb Simpson. And Tom Watson said that it came to him this morning. I don't know about that, but hey, he's going to join Bubba Watson, Patrick Reed, Zach Johnson, Jim Furyk, Ricky Fowler, Matt Puchar, Phil Mickelson, Jimmy Walker, and Jordan Spieth as the Magnificent 12, Fred, for Team USA. So how about those picks by Tom Watson and the rest of the team?
Yeah, we've been talking about it for some time. We were pretty certain Keegan Bradley was going to be one of the picks just based on that he has been playing a little bit better of late. He really wanted to be on the team very badly. He took the loss at Medina really hard, and he pairs so well with Phil Mickelson, and God knows Phil needs some help. So Keegan pretty much had to be on the team. Hunter Mahan really stated his case by winning the week before at the Barclays. Really took a huge jump up in everybody's eyes at that point. He was on the outside looking in before that. You know, people had been looking at Webb before and been looking at Brant Snedeker and kind of overlooking Mahan, but that win at the Barclays pretty much cemented his place on the team, and he can just pair up with a lot of different guys, so especially in foursomes, which is a hard thing to play for the U.S. teams, he's a good foursome partner. And then the last pick came down to, yeah, you were looking at Ryan Moore. Yeah, you were looking at Brant Snedeker. Yeah, you were looking at Chris Kirk. But, you know, it really boils down to when I started doing pairings and things here earlier today, who are you going to put with Bubba Watson? Who's going to play with Bubba Watson? Webb Simpson's the only guy. They're good buddies. I don't know who else you can put with him. You know, and if you don't pick Webb, and so he can pair with Bubba, then Bubba's going to pout all week because his good buddy's not on the team with him. So, you know, you pretty much had to pick Webb Simpson. I think it just came down to that. Tom said he had an aha moment this morning. I think it came earlier than that. I think it pretty much had to be Webb Simpson. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Hey, I think you're calling Bubba Watson a prima donna. That's what I'm doing.
He is. He is. There is no question about it.
So you actually are calling him that? Oh, my
God. I am.
Okay, no problem. Kieran, how about those picks? Fred says, I also don't think that this came down to this morning for Webb Simpson, but how about those picks for Team USA?
Well, I must quickly say, firstly, I hope that Fred has got some really good lawyers there after those outrageous comments of Bubba Watson. As for the American picks, you know, for me, it's a solid, if unspectacular, three selections there from Tom Watson. As Fred said, Keegan Bradley, we all kind of felt, was a lock in the sense that he has been in improved form recently. He finished tied for fourth at the Bridgestone and the Greenbrier, as well as the US Open. So he had quite a decent summer, and as Fred rightly said there, he partnered so well with Phil Mickelson 2 years ago, a little bit like what Anthony Kim did back at Valhalla in 2008. You know, the young guy with the veteran Mickelson, they connected really well and kind of, you know, buzzed off each other and really generated a lot of momentum. And that certainly happened at Medina. You know, kind of if you want to look back at history, perhaps if Davis Love had played Bradley and Mickelson together in the Saturday afternoon at Medina, then maybe it would have been over and the Americans would have won the Ryder Cup 2 years ago. So, again, naturally we'll see that pairing probably happen again this year at Glen Eagles. I think a big thing for Bradley as well, though, was, of course, his obvious desire to be on that team. You know, before the Open Championship this year, Tom Watson made a call to invite potential team members to come play with him at Glen Eagles ahead of the Ryder Cup, get a look at the golf course, a feel for the place. And Bradley was one of only two players to answer that call. Jim Furyk was the other one. So Bradley spent a day with Tom Watson at Glen Eagles back in July. He played the golf course. He showed Tom Watson he is fully determined back in the Ryder Cup team. He wanted to be there. Now he's there. And, you know, that real passion and desire to go on the team is a big thing. And I think that perhaps swayed it in his favour ultimately. Hunter Mahan, of course, as Fred said there, a player who has a lot of qualities that are very desirable in match play. He's a very good driver of the golf ball. He's a very good iron player as well. Tom Watson said during his press conference that three of the last four events that Hunter Mahan has played in, he has actually led the greens and regulation stats. So in foursomes there, you're going to set up your partner with a lot of birdie putts. So a massive asset there. And Mahan as well, of course, has come back to form, won the Barclays 2 weeks ago. And in addition to that as well, you know, a word that was spoken a lot about this week here from the three American guys there, the picks, they all said redemption. It's all about redemption for them. And Hunter Mahan, of course, 4 years ago had that terrible chip. They duffed the chip on the 16th hole in the decisive match at Celtic Manor, lost to Graham McDowell, lost the Ryder Cup. He was in tears afterwards. You can see how much it meant to him to be part of the Ryder Cup and then to lose it. And then 2 years ago, he missed out on the automatic qualification spots by one spot. He finished ninth in the spots, top eight qualified for Davis Love's team. Hunter Mahan was overlooked for a pick, and he said that really hurt. He said that 2 years ago. So he's back here trying to prove something, you know, something to prove, unfinished business, if you like, for the Ryder Cup. As has Webb Simpson, one of those Medina guys. And I think this is really the last pick, and this is the one that's most divisive. You know, Chris Kirk came in here. He won yesterday. He's the only two-time winner on the PGA Tour this year not to be on the Ryder Cup team of either side. So it's a massive, you know, he still had a very good chance probably yesterday. But as Fred says there, you know, Simpson, you know, he can pair well with Bubba. They did that. They won both their four-ball matches, 5 and 4, 2 years ago at Medina when they played together. So that's a natural pairing right there again. Simpson's one of these players who, you know, he's a solid player. He's a good putter. He's one of those guys that you think is going to be reliable enough, perhaps more than a rookie. One thing about Chris Kirk, of course, that he is a rookie. Would you want to take a rookie to an away Ryder Cup? America already have three on the team. Would you want a fourth one in there? Maybe not. Perhaps what swayed Tom Watson to go for Webb Simpson. And Simpson has shown better form recently. He's had 2 top 10 finishes in his last 3 starts. So he's shown Tom Watson that he's playing better. So 3 picks there that are solid. You know, they're guys that have been there. Well, that counts for a lot. We'll have to wait and see. But they're solid guys. 3 guys that have won big events. 2 of them won majors. Mahan's won WGCs. You know, these are guys that have been at the top level of the game for the last 2 or 3, for the last 5 years, really, particularly in Mahan's case. So the American team overall, I think, is actually fairly solid for the most part. I think you could actually make an argument in the sense that, arguably, the 3 picks for America are in better form than the 2 of the 3 picks for Europe. So, you know, we'll see how it all kind of boils down to the 3 days of the Ryder Cup itself. But for me, the American team is looking relatively strong. Maybe not quite as strong as the European team is. I think depth-wise, I think I quite like the second half of the United States team. And with this sort of idea of redemption and coming back, trying, you know, get the Ryder Cup back and prove that, you know, they can make up for the errors they had 2 years ago in that devastating loss, I think the Americans will actually thrive under the underdog tag at Glen Eagles. Will it be enough for them to go on and win the thing? Time will tell, but I think they'll be a lot more competitive than many people think.
Oh, they will, and let's say this. The Europeans on paper, Kieran, have been touted, you know, as being the favorites, and that was said also by Tom Watson. But talking about the European side, Paul McKinley, the captain, he rounded out his roster this morning, and when he announced his picks as Ian Poulter, Stephen Gallagher, and Lee Westwood, which was the most intriguing and maybe debated surrounding that third and final spot, which became maybe a toss-up between Westwood and another of the English mainstays there on that team, which is Luke Donald. Both of them have been fixtures and leaders in several successful European teams. But, you know, Stephen Gallagher, he really targeted being in this Ryder Cup from the start of the year, hoping to play his way onto the loaded team. But he fell short, but his play maybe ultimately play into this. But that toss-up between Westwood, who has been in every Ryder Cup since 1997, by far the most experienced player there from Europe, and he has a good record, will be there joining them. So how about those picks from Team Europe by Captain Paul McGinley, Kim?
Well, I think you're right there, Carlos, with Stephen Gallagher, and I think it was a case of, you know, Gallagher's performance in Italy completely changed the game. You know, had Gallagher on at the weekend there in Italy finished perhaps 20th or 25th, I don't believe he would have been picked. I think McGinley would have went with the three Englishmen, Poulter, Westwood and Donald. But I think the fact that Gallagher finished one shot out of automatically qualifying, he finished one back of second place, he had to finish in the top two in Italy to knock out Graham McDowell and finish in the top nine automatic spots. So I think Gallagher's performance, the courage he showed there to fight for that spot and the form that he showed, I think that, it left it very difficult for Paul McGinley not to pick him. And had he not picked Stephen Gallagher, there would have been a lot of outrage, I think, and certainly among newspaper guys in Scotland. But I think, generally speaking as well, I think Gallagher, the form he showed this year, meant him fully merits a place on the Ryder Cup team. He was in the top 11 on both points lists. He has 8 top 10 finishes this season. He retained his title in Dubai this year alongside guys like Rory and Tiger were there. And he has a fantastic record at the PGA Centenary course at Glen Eagles as well. He has 7 top 10 finishes there, including second place last year, and he lost out in the playoff to Tommy Fleetwood. So he has course form. And McGinley spoke an awful lot about guys. Last year he said he believed an awful lot in course form. Guys that had played Glen Eagles well before would be in his mind. And then guys who were playing well in the month leading into the Ryder Cup were also in his mind. So Gallagher ticks both those boxes. Of course, he is a rookie, and it's very rare to pick a rookie. You know, Cole Sarts last time and Molinari the time before are two of the more recent examples of that. But rookies don't tend to be given wild card picks. But Gallagher has qualities there. Of course, when you get into a Ryder Cup situation, you don't know how a rookie's going to react to it. You know, the pressure of a Ryder Cup is incredible. You know, it's unimaginable, really, to anyone who hasn't experienced it on that first tee. It's a cauldron of pressure. So how will Gallagher cope with that? You know, time will tell. But I think he has one advantage, of course, knowing that he knows the golf course. He has played there before. He has played well there before. He knows it. And I think that may give him a little bit more calmness than perhaps he would have had at a venue elsewhere. And, of course, being in Scotland, you have a massive, rampant support behind him. It's a big thing for the event, of course, to have a Scottish player on home soil. And he's following in his uncle's footsteps, Bernard, the legendary guy, Ryder Cup player and captain. Bernard actually played in the Ryder Cup in Scotland back in 73 at Muirfield. So Stephen Gallagher was a lock, I think, for the way he performed the weekend there. That made him, he ticked all the boxes, showed McGinley he could do it. He had the ability under pressure. And Ian Poulter was really the kind of perhaps the easiest pick as such, given that we all kind of expected Poulter to be on that team, sort of the talismanic performance at Medina. He almost seemed to single-handedly turn around the momentum that Saturday evening, an incredible final four holes that he played there. And, you know, Poulter has got an extraordinary Ryder Cup record. He's played 15 matches in the Ryder Cup, and he's won 12 of them. You know, that's just astounding, you know. And, yes, his form has been very patchy this year, to say the least. But he's one of those guys that perhaps you can maybe expect him to perhaps raise his game in the Ryder Cup. He's certainly, you know, attitude-wise, he could be a leader on the golf course. He's one of those guys who has that real passion. He comes alive in the Ryder Cup, you know, comes a bit kind of psychotic-looking almost with his eyes. And, you know, you partner him with his partner in any match he's going to be playing, will feel inspired by that. The guys around the golf course will feel inspired by Ian Poulter and anyone in the team room. The passion he has for the Ryder Cup is incredible. And I think he was also going to be a pick. And I just say, Carlos, the final pick was really the divisive one. Lee Westwood was picked ahead of Luke Donald, and really that was a lot of people would have picked Luke Donald. I certainly would have done. I think Luke Donald has certainly look at his. I think really this case, neither of them have played particularly well this year, particularly in the last 4 months. And so neither Westwood or Donald tick every single box that you'd want in picking a Ryder Cup player. And they both tick some of them. And it depended here what McGinley valued more than the other. And Luke Donald, what does he have over Lee Westwood? He's a better putter. He has a better short game. Two things that are very important, obviously, in any situation, particularly match play. Luke Donald has a better win percentage in the Ryder Cup than Lee Westwood. And Luke Donald has never lost in a Ryder Cup team, or a Walker Cup team for that matter. So I think Luke Donald can feel a little bit aggrieved, a little bit, but in the end he didn't play well enough. And Lee Westwood, what does Lee Westwood bring? Obviously, as you say, Carlos, a huge level of experience. This will be his ninth Ryder Cup. He's played every time since 1997. He has won six Ryder Cups, more than any other European player in history. I think as well for Lee Westwood, he's someone who, he's a big personality. And I think behind the scenes, it's well known before, guys, Nicholas Kolstad has spoken about this. Lee Westwood is a really good influence on younger players, rookies, and even the older guys as well. He's got a big personality. He's a leader in the team room. And I think McGinley may have felt he needed that. And if that was the case, then he's got it in Lee Westwood. And Westwood has shown a little bit more form. He had a very poor run in July, but he finished well at Bridgestone with a 63 on Sunday. And he's had a good performance at the PGA Championship with Valhalla. So Westwood showed some form, but it certainly was not an easy call. One thing with Westwood as well, of course, is his compatibility. He partners well with other players. I looked through the records. He has had 9 different partners in the Ryder Cup down the years. Faldo, Clark, Garcia, Montgomery, Donald, Soren Hansen, Martin Keimer, Francesco Molinari, and Nicholas Kolstad. A great variety of players. He partnered well with all of them. I think that is, we have 3 rookies in the team this year. You know, you have Donaldson, Dubuisson, and Gallagher. We might see one of those guys alongside Lee Westwood, a warhorse, a veteran. And so I can understand both sides of the argument for Donald Westwood, but I'll say, you know, it's one of those things. Either guy could feel aggrieved they weren't picked, but in the end, it completes a very formidable-looking European Ryder Cup team. But on paper, you say, Carlos, they are favourites, but you know, the game of golf, particularly an event so unpredictable at the Ryder Cup, is not played on paper. But the European team does look very strong.
It's played on the field, and the ball is round, so anything can happen. Now, Fred, Donald is obviously the biggest omission. You publicly have said that you wouldn't have picked him. You would have picked Westwood. You would have picked Donald, who was a former number one player in the world. He has an incredible record of success there as a European veteran, only 4 losses in 15 matches. But you got to look back and see that his lack of consistency form over that qualifying period, added to the inability of Poulter and Westwood to claim automatic berths, ultimately gave Captain Paul McGinley a big problem, but there was just too much talent and too many impressive records there to choose for McGinley. He probably could have filled the 2 teams, 24 men deep, and any of them, both would have been competitive with Tom Watson's USI. So Donald has said that he's very, very disappointed, but how about those picks and what you think about it, Fred?
Yeah, I like Luke Donald. I'm a Luke Donald fan, have been for a long, long time. Lee Westwood just has not performed this year. He missed the cut at both the U.S. Open and the Open Championship. He's out of the FedEx Cup playoffs already. He just has not had a very good – he didn't have a very good year last year, and he's had a really below-average year this year. So – yes, he's been on 9 Ryder Cups. He's been a winner 6 times on the Ryder Cup, and that's all well and good. But maybe McGinley, like Kieran said, he really needs that veteran voice to carry the rookies and to be a leader. Maybe when I look down the names that are on the team, you know, who is that guy? Well, maybe it's going to have to be Westwood, maybe. I'm not sure. Gallagher, I think he, like Kieran said, he just cemented his place on the team with his play in Italy and the week before in Czechoslovakia. That was, those were great. He did fantastic. He just showed that he wanted to be on it. And he's had a really good year. He's played consistent all year long. Poulter, we knew from the beginning he was going to have to be on the team. It just didn't matter what he was doing, because when they tee it up at the Ryder Cup, he becomes Superman. So, he was a lock, and I think, Kieran hit it right on the head that when Gallagher played so well and forced his way on there as a pick, it made a decision between Luke Donald and Lee Westwood. McGinley chose Westwood. My biggest question is, by picking Westwood, who in the hell is Sergio going to play with?
Well, Sergio would play alongside Lee Westwood, theoretically, given that Westwood and Garcia played alongside each other in 2002 and 2004, and played together one match of leave in 2006 as well. So there's a natural pairing right there. It's not quite a Bubba Watson situation with Garcia. Not quite, though. Maybe a little bit. But, I think Lee Westwood partners very well with different people, whether it be rookies or more experienced guys. Certainly, his long game hasn't been as good as it has been in the past, but he hits more fairways than Luke Donald. He hits more greens than Luke Donald. And a foursomes situation, that, of course, is going to be very imperative. But again, of course, if you have a chip or a five-footer to win, is Lee Westwood going to be your guy to pick for that? Then probably not. So I think, really, both Westwood and Donald had... They didn't tick every single box, but they both ticked some of the boxes. And the case of which of those boxes do you value more than the other? And McGinley has clearly felt the experience of Westwood, the slightly more improved form he's shown in recent weeks, that edged him ahead of Donald, who will perhaps say, well, I'm a better putter, I've got a better short game, I've even got a better record. But again, if we're picking people on records, then Colin Montgomery's still going to be a pick, Nick Faldo's still going to be a pick. So in the end, you're only as good as your last game. But I would have picked Donald. I would have picked Donald over Westwood. However, I can see both sides of the argument, and Westwood could quite easily turn up and play well. In the end, we speak about form all the time. And it's all fine male to play well on a tour event and have three or four good weeks, but when you come to the Ryder Cup, which is in 3 weeks' time, everything can change. Your form can desert you, or you can find something, particularly in such an atmosphere where the pressure can make you crumble or you can thrive under it. Some guys do crumble under the pressure. Some guys thrive under it. Ian Poulter is undoubtedly one of those. Maybe Lee West will be one of those guys as well. Certainly he knows how to handle the situation. And when you have rookies in that team, you partner him with a rookie, then that rookie is going to know the guy next to me has been there, done it, he experienced everything you can in the Ryder Cup team. So the European team, Donald perhaps could feel aggrieved slightly not to go on the team, but in the end, it's a very strong 12. And the American team as well is strong, of course. 24 players there, all the guys in the top 40 in the world rankings, and it makes for a very exciting Ryder Cup to come in 3 weeks' time.
I got another point for you, Kieran. You guys are getting a little bit long in the tooth there. You got Dubuisson and you got Rory that are younger, but everybody else on that team has been around for a while and getting a few years under their belt. Even Gallagher coming in this year, he's 39. Westwood's 41. Bjorn, I think he's about ready for the senior tour. Donaldson, he's no spring chicken. You got some older guys there, man.
Well, I guess that's true, but in the end, I think it's the case, generally speaking, of these guys have been there and done it, and they've had so much success in the past decade, and I think most of these guys here have been part of that. The rookies haven't been part of that, but those guys have come in here, and they will feel they can be part of it as well. Thomas Bjorn's the one that interests me, of course, given it's been 12 years since he's played in the Ryder Cup. It's a long time. A lot has changed since then. The Ryder Cup is probably a bigger event now than it was 12 years ago. You look at the, again, perhaps, this could be the last Ryder Cup, certainly for Lee Westwood, for Thomas Bjorn, maybe even for someone like, maybe guys like Donaldson, Gallagher might never get in the situation again. So certainly, it could be 2 years down the line at Hazeltine, it could be a very different European team. But the nucleus of European team is undoubtedly very strong, and undoubtedly guys at the top of the game. Four of the top five players in the European team are inside the top five in the world golf rankings. Obviously, you have McIlroy, you have Stenson.
You had to bring that up, didn't you?
I had to bring that up, Fred. It's the kind of you're actually making a case for the Americans doing quite well here. I had to kind of put you down there.
You made the point earlier too that the bottom end, you've got Gallagher's number 33 in the world, Poulter's number 36, and Westwood number 38. Down at the bottom end, you guys are a little light in the in the official world golf ranking.
I would agree with that, Fred, to an extent. You know, and I know a lot of people are making Europe big favorites, and particularly Americans for that matter, and they're all kind of saying it's going to be like a record blowout score. It's not. You know, this is not the same U.S. team that turned up at the K Club in 2006 when guys like Brett Wetterich and Vaughn Taylor, who you've never heard of since, were on that team. Even J.J. Henry was on that team, and they got blown out by 9 points. You know, that's
you just heard of Vaughn Taylor. He tried to drown himself fishing.
That's right. That was 2 weeks ago, wasn't it? I'm sorry, Vaughn. Don't feel depressed about that. But, nothing goes right for Vaughn Taylor. I agree with you there, Fred. You look at guys like, obviously Westwood hasn't shown much form. Donaldson, Gallagher, Dubuisson, they're all very good players, but, obviously there's a question mark for a rookie. And you have guys like Bjorn, who you wonder, is he going to turn up and actually play well? He's almost like a rookie himself, in a sense, given it's been 12 years since he last played in the Ryder Cup. So it's one of those things where, on the day, we all kind of try and say, look at the paper and what's going to happen, but in the end, anything can happen. Things can change so quickly. And this golf course is not going to favor the Europeans over the Americans particularly. It's a very American-style golf course. It's going to favor guys that hit the ball far, as most golf courses do. And, I said last year, and I said it on this show, and I said the Americans would win this one. And I've slightly swayed from that this time. I'm not convinced they'll win it, but I'm going to go for my stock prediction, which I've said for the last 4 or 5 years now. Every Ryder Cup, I've been desperate to see a tie, a halved match, because I'd love to see sort of Twitter and implode, as I would have no idea how to react to a halved match, 14-14 tie. So I'm going to say, if my dream result is a 14-14 tie at Glen Eagles, the masses will not like it, but I'm going to go for that.
Well, I'll go the other way, and I've been saying I don't think the U.S. is going to get 10 points, but maybe they'll surprise me. But I don't think they will.
Have some faith. Have some faith.
Vaughn Taylor isn't on this team.
Hey,
yeah, but Patrick Reed is, and
Fred, 3 weeks ago, you were picking Patrick Reed to win the PGA Championship. So what are you talking about? I've got a very good memory.
No, you know what, and I have to say, I really look for Patrick Reed to have a big Ryder Cup because he's been really quiet the last few weeks, and I think he's a match play kind of guy, especially like in four ball, if they can find the right guy to put with him. I struggled with that. We'll talk about that here in a minute, but I've really struggled to figure out who to put with him. Do I put somebody else who's really aggressive and go for it and let him just go, or do you put a conservative like a Zach Johnson or a Jim Furyk with him to keep him balanced, to at least keep him in the fairway so when he's throwing it all over the place. But I don't know. I really think he could have a really big week.
Hey.
Yeah, I agree with that. So Patrick Reed's one of those guys who, as you say, he's got the attitude. He is not short on self-belief, that is for sure. He's almost like Ian Poulter in that respect. He has a sort of inner determination, inner arrogance, if you like, which cannot be sometimes it can be a bit not an unhealthy thing in a situation like the Ryder Cup. So he'll go into there believing he can go and kick some backside of the Europeans. But again, who do you pair him with? As you say there, you have two options, whether put him with an R guy who's quite aggressive or with a Zach Johnson type or maybe a Jim Furyk type. So I'm saying that Patrick Reed and Jim Furyk, you couldn't get more contrasting personalities right there. The world might just explode with those two together, so maybe not.
Hey, we'll pick up this in 3 weeks when the Ryder Cup is going to start, so we have to move on to the recaps now. This is a lot interesting, but we have to move on. So
let's take a short break.
Yes, I know, but we have to take a short
break.
And when we come back, we'll start our recaps from this weekend's action as well.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and I was about to sound, the boxing bell there, but let's keep it for 3 weeks from now. Okay, let's go for our recaps for this weekend's action. Let's start with the PGA Tour and the FedEx Cup, who is in the second leg right now, the Deutsche Bank Championship, where Chris Kirk, he fired a final round 5-under 66, and he was able to hold off Billy Horschel to win it by 2 shots on Monday. He jumped from the top of the FedEx Cup playoff points list with 2 events to play, finished the week at 15 under par at TPC Boston. His last win was at the McIntyre Classic earlier this season. Horschel was needing a birdie or to tie or an eagle to win heading into the par 5 last hole. But he put his drive in the middle of the fairway, then giving him a shot to make the green too. However, the 27-year-old chunked his second shot, which landed well short and in a hazard. He settled for a bogey and fell into a 3-way tie for second. He was joined there at 13 under by Jeff Ogilvie and third-round leader Russell Henley. This year's Open champion and PGA champion winner, Rory McIlroy, who won this event last year and entered the FedEx Cup playoffs with the number one spot, shot it with 1-under 70 to finish tied for fifth with Jon Snedden at 11-under. So McIlroy now remains number two in the standings. Jason Day, who's entered the day again there near the top, just 2 shots back, along with Kirk and McIlroy, caught a final round 71, and he tied for seventh with this year's U.S. Open champion, Martin Keimer. Had a great outing there at 10-under. So entering the week, the number one spot in the FedEx Cup standings this week after his win at the Barclays, Hunter Mahan, he finished in sole possession of 64th place at 1-over. On Monday, he's now number three in the standings behind Kirk and McIlroy. Kirk, no, it's worth noting he did not make a bogey his final 37 holes and jumped from number 17 to number one in the standings with the win. So, Fred, how about the win by Chris Kirk and his big jump now to number one in the standings?
Yeah, really nice win for him. You and I were talking about earlier, playing alongside Rory McIlroy there, and kind of looked him in the eye and said, you're not so tough, buddy. I can take you down," and beat him by a smooth little 4 shots on Sunday to get the win. Rory shooting 70 and falling down to T5. But, he really put himself on the map there, almost got that pack pick for the Ryder Cup team from that win. You've got Kirk now leading the FedEx Cup, Rory number two. You got Hunter Mahan, Jimmy Walker, Matt Kuchar, Bubba Johnson, Jason Day rounding out the list there at the top. Webb Simpson, who did get the pick for the Ryder Cup team, finished at a T9, so a good tournament for him. And Phil Mickelson ended up clear down at T45. Mickelson is like number five in the Ryder Cup points. How does that happen? I can't figure that out. He's had one top 10 this year, and I don't understand it, but he cannot put 2 rounds together. He shoots 74, 69, 72, 67. Just he is so inconsistent this year, cannot get it together. There are two other stories along with this, guys down at the bottom, because there was 100 players in this week. They were cutting down to 70 for the BMW this week. KJ Choi went from 69 to 65. He helped himself. Carl Pettersson, big mover, from number 93 clear to number 66. Matt Jones went the other way. He went from 54 down to 67. He better play better this week or he'll be out. Morgan Hoffman moved in. He was at 72. He was out, moved into 68. Ben Crane also moved up to 69. Jerry Kelly almost missed out. He got the 70th spot. Robert Streb, it was just fractions of points that allowed him not to be in. Ryo Ishikawa is out. He went from 56 to 72. Jason Kokrak, he did not have enough. David Hearn is outside looking in, so is Justin Hicks. Then the other thing to watch then is the guys right around 30. You've got Justin Rose at 27, Keegan Bradley 28, Gary Woodland, 29. You got Hideki Matsuyama, 30, and also Harris English at 31. So those are the guys. That's where they're cutting to this week. They're going from 70 down to 30 for the Tour Championship down at East Lake in Atlanta. So you've got to watch kind of both ends, whoever's winning and also who's down at that cut line and giving themselves a chance to make it to the next step. So pretty good tournament. I got to see a lot of the play on Monday. But kind of surprising that Kirk was able to hang in there and do it. And he's just had a really good year. If he has this kind of year next year, he'll definitely be on the President's Cup team next year and probably the Ryder Cup team going forward.
Maybe he'll win the FedEx Cup just to say, hey, Tom, see what you missed. Hey, Kieran, Stuart Singh, Brent Snedeker, Vijay Singh, and Luke Donald were among those eliminated from the FedEx Cup playoffs. And how about this one that Chris Kirk won $1.44 million for the record?
Oh, money. I must quickly answer Fred's query as to how Phil Mickelson's fifth on the U.S. Ryder Cup standings. Last year, the major championships in 2013 actually count for the point standing, so he actually, of course, won the Open Championship, so that's why he has such a high points total, as well as finishing second at the PGA as well. So that's why he's fifth in the standings. They have points for the majors over the last 2 years for the American Ryder Cup.
Thank you for clearing that up.
Okay, no worries. Chris Kirk, tremendous, second win for him, as you say, Fred, playing alongside Rory McIlroy on the weekend there, 36 holes, fantastic performance there, 64-66, under that pressure where you're playing alongside the world number one player, spotlight's on you, you're playing in a big championship, a lot of money on state, of course, and it was potentially, of course, as it may have turned out, maybe a Ryder Cup pick. It didn't turn out to be the case, but he had the chance, and he did not drop a single shot during those final 36 holes. And that golf course, PBC Boston, is tricky. The greens are complex. There's a lot of runoffs. The rough was thick when you missed the fairway, particularly around the greens as well. So it was a tricky golf course. And to not drop a shot in 36 holes is extremely impressive, particularly when you're trying to contend and win a championship. Certainly had a little bit of luck at times, a few bounces and whatever, but these things happen, and he made the most of it. And he deserves a lot of credit for winning that. I just see Fred, that's his second win of this season. He won back in November. So he can go in next year with a lot of confidence. And, of course, in the FedEx Cup, maybe, as you say, Carlos, he might just stick two fingers up to Tom Watson to win the next two events. You never know. That would be funny, wouldn't it? But, great win for him. And a great week for Jeff Ogilvy, the Australian, who 2006 US Open champion, who was a recent winner at the Barracuda Championship. That's quite a name for an event. He won there, and he shot 65-65 at the weekend there. So back to form, Jeff. He started the Deutsche Bank at 100 in the FedEx Cup point standings, and he's now well inside the top 70 for next week. So Jeff Ogilvy back to form. Good to see. And Russell Henley, of course, had a very good chance to get his second win of the year, having won the Honda Classic back in March. A very streaky player, a guy who, when he's on form, he is very good. When he's not on form, you never see him. He's one of those guys who's either hit or miss. Sunday, he wasn't very good. Level par for the day isn't good enough, and that's why he didn't win. Billy Horschel, a guy who has a lot of passion, a lot of fire. Indeed, a bit like Patrick Reed, a lot of self-confidence. Some would call it arrogance, some would call it self-belief, but I'll let you decide on that one. And, of course, he had that humbling experience on the last hole where he duffed his first shot into the Branca short of the 18th green. Again, highly pressured situation. These things can happen. Happens to the best players in the world, as you saw there. Happens to me every week, but happens to one of the best players in the world right there. These things happen. And, again, Rory McIlroy, good week for him. Top five finish. Keeps him inside the FedEx Cup top five, which is, of course, the prize place you want to be. The winner of a Tour Championship, if you're in the top five, is guaranteed to win the FedEx Cup money. And Martin Kaymer, good week for him. He said he had a real struggle since the US Open. Obviously won the Players' Championship in the US Open succession. And since then, he has missed three cuts in six events. Hasn't posted a top 10. So to get him back in there, good week for him. Good form going into the rest of the season. And, of course, the Ryder Cup. Jason Day, final round of 71. He was right in the mix there after the first 3 days. 71 on Sunday is not good enough in the situation. And he's to be a recurring trend with Jason Day where a player of his immense talent and one of the most gifted players in the game, particularly in the big events and tough golf courses, and two wins in the PGA Tour, that is not reflective of his talent. So perhaps something to look out for here is on Sunday he is just not performing to the extent that he needs to win events. And I must quickly mention Fred's favourite golfer and everyone's favourite moderately overweight American golfer, who is Patrick Reed. And he missed a 54-hole cut at Deutsche Bank after shooting an 82. So he'd be very disappointed about that, but he's going to the Ryder Cup. And but for Chris Kirk, he's not going to the Ryder Cup, but he's going to next week in Atlanta in good form.
Oh, he will be, definitely, and looking forward, like he said, to keep up his good work there at the FedEx Cup. And what a difference a year makes. Last year's FedEx Cup champion and defending champion of that event, Henrik Stenson, finished to a tie for 26 at 6 under, and he's number 55 right now in the standing. So what a difference a year makes. Hey, let's talk now about the Web.com Tour, the Hotel Fitness Championship, the start of the playoffs there for them. But Colley fired a 7-under-65 on Sunday as he rallied to win the Hotel Fitness Championship. He ended his first Web.com Tour title at 20-under-par. He matched the tournament record score of 268 that Trevor Immelman set last year in the first year of this tournament. With the victory, he's now guaranteed to keep his PGA Tour card for next year. He finished 129th on the PGA Tour money list this year, just missing the cutoff off the top 125 that kept their tour cards for next season. Third-round leader Colt Knost missed a birdie putt on the final green that would have forced a playoff. He settled for second place at 19-under. Greg Alwyn closed with a 70 to take third place at minus 16. David Lindmerth matched the low round of the day with his 8-under-64. He was joined fourth place at 14-under by Tom Gillis and Sam Saunders. So, Fred, how about the Hotel Fitness Championship, the start of the Web.com Tour Final Four events?
Yeah, that's a really nice golf course out there, Sycamore Hills, on the kind of the southwest corner of Fort Wayne. A really nice area out there, beautiful golf course, really nice facility. Bud Colley got the win. You know, he's been on the he was on the tour last year, last 2 years, and found himself outside the top 125. Had to go to the Web.com Tour Finals, but he'll be back on tour next year with this win. He began the day in fourth place, 2 shots behind leader Colt Knost, but he started really fast. He had 5 birdies in his first 6 holes and added 2 more on the back nine to finish at 7-under-par-65 to leave him 1 shot clear of Knost after Knost missed a chance to tie him there at the last. Knost fired a 4-under-par-68, but like you said, he just comes up just a little bit short. He does move up to number 4 in the web.com Tour priority list and should punch his ticket back to the PGA Tour for next season also. Three-time winner this year on the web.com Tour, Carlos Ortiz. He continues to lead the priority list, but shot 76-77, missed the cut at Fort Wayne. Surprising note, Sam Saunders, Arnold Palmer's grandson, shot a pair of 66s to hold the 36-hole lead, but 70-72 on the weekend dropped him to a T4 finish. So good week for him, but I'm sure he was looking for a little bit more after that really good start. The Tour Finals moves to North Carolina for the Chiquita Classic, the second of the 4 legs of the Web.com Tour Finals.
Definitely, and Colley earned $108,000 for the win he played the last 3 years on the PGA Tour. He's going to be now back. So Kieran, some thoughts here on Colley's win, and how about the Web.com Tour Final Four?
Well, I think Bud Colley's an interesting story. You know, he's one of those guys who 2 or 3 years ago, you know, all the pundits and the writers were all, and people observing it, we all kind of felt he's going to be one of those guys that's going to come onto the PGA Tour and really become one of the top players within 2 or 3 years. We kind of felt he'd be almost like a Jordan Spieth sort of player. He came onto the PGA Tour straight out of college. He was able to get, you know, earn his card without going to Q School. He had enough invites, made enough money in those events in the fall in 2011 to actually secure his card, and he joined Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson and a few others in that feat. In 2012, he had a very solid season, 4 top 10s in the PGA Tour, so kind of felt Bud Colley was a young guy who'd come out and really grew into be one of the top players, perhaps would have been a Ryder Cup player by this point. But it hasn't happened. Of course, he lost his card last year in the PGA Tour. He got it back, though, in the Web.com Tour Finals last year. And again, the same situation's happened again this season. Yes, he's rectified with that win, but for Bud Colley, I think next season's going to be a big one. You know, he has to consolidate his position on the PGA Tour, get some consistency, get some stability. You do not want to be going back to the Web.com Tour Finals every single year. He has to go on to the tour, stay there, and eventually get back to where his talent certainly could bring him to. And but, you know, there's a lot of character there. Coming off the web.com tour and get on there and getting the win, what a character. And for Colt Knost, another guy who, when he was a younger player, again, a player with a lot of potential, a U.S. amateur champion back in 2007. He turned professional almost immediately after that, gave up the opportunity to play in the Masters and the Open Championship and so on. And, again, as a professional, it hasn't really happened for him either. And but gives him a chance to go on the PGA Tour next year after that performance. And Greg Owen, you know, an experienced Englishman who's been on the PGA Tour and the web.com tour for about 12 years now. He's been over in the States for a while. A guy who kind of was a solid PGA Tour player for a while. He finished second a couple of times, I think. I think it's Bay Hill was one of them he finished second in. So he's now in a position to get back on the PGA Tour as well for next season. And but for Bud Cauley, you know, a guy, as I said there, someone who had so much potential 3 years ago, a lot of promise as a player, hasn't quite happened for him, but he's only 24 years of age. You know, get swim behind him, get back on the PGA Tour, and have a good start to next season, he might have a big year, and have to wait and see. And one guy who is in trouble, though, I must quickly mention, in trouble in terms of getting his status in the PGA Tour next year, he just missed out on the first 25 last week. He finished outside that, he was 27th coming into this week. And that is, of course, my favourite player, the mystery man, Sebastian Catalan, the man who doesn't have a photograph on the PGA Tour website. He missed the cut, unfortunately, this week. And he's in big trouble in terms of getting his PGA Tour card next year, because I want him to go on the PGA Tour so I can actually find out what he looks like. But anyway, come on, Sebastian, you can do it for me.
Hey, you know, Billy Idol had a song.
I'll try to get a picture of him for you next week, Kieran, when they're down in Columbus.
Best,
I'll try and run him down.
Get one of those wonderful selfies that people do. You get a picture with the guy himself, and you get a nice cheesy smile for me.
Hey, Billy Idol had a song called Eyes Without a Face. Sebastian Catalan is the man without a face. So, anyway, Fred, you were there in Fort Wayne, Indiana, in Sycamore Hills Golf Course this week. And you have some, you made some interviews for us this week. You have Bill Cowley, Carlos Ortiz, and Jason Gore. So, let's start with the Web.com president, Web.com tour president, Bill Cowley. So, set it up for us.
Yeah, Mr. Cowley made himself available to do some interviews on Wednesday morning, and so I took the opportunity to sit down with him for a few minutes and talk to him and ask him some questions about the status of the Web.com tour, where they're going, what they're looking at, and he was very forthcoming, answered the questions, and we just had a really nice chat. So go ahead and let's listen to that.
Let's listen to Web.com tour president Bill Cowley.
We're here with Bill Cowley, who is the president of the Web.com Tour. We're here at Fort Wayne for the Hotel Fitness Championship, the first stop on the Web.com Tour Finals. This is you just finished up 2014 regular season last week. You're beginning in the finals this week. Can you give us a grade for the year? What was good, and what needs to be addressed for next season on the Web.com Tour?
Well, I think you know, last year was our first year of the new structure with all 50 cards coming through the Web.com Tour, this really being the path to the PGA Tour, the finals, four final events for the first time. So when you look back on it, was a huge success. I think we've built on that success this year. There's certainly more interest in the tour. No question its stature has been elevated as a result of this structure, and having the first event here. This is the second time we're having the first event as a playoffs here, or finals here. You know, we look back and it's even bigger this year. I mean, looking around the build out, if you talk to people in the community, there's more interest. You know, we can always get better. I think in terms of looking at the Web.com Tour, we'd like to see a few more events. We're playing in Latin America. We're playing in Canada. We're playing 25 events. We'd like to see that number grow, but we want to do slow growth where we get into good markets that we know are sustainable long term, and we think Fort Wayne is certainly one of those markets that can have a great event. We've got a wonderful facility here. We know golf is big in Fort Wayne, so we think we can be here for many years to come.
Speaking of that, I think you had 21 events plus the four final events. So I think I put you at 25 or 26 for the year, something like that. with the added interest, are you able to talk to sponsors? Are you able to get some new sponsor money in, maybe to raise purses, start some more events?
Well, I think both. I think we're, you know, the as we continue to grow the impact in each of the markets where we play, I think the tournaments are able to sell more sponsorships, raise more money, and part of that, there's got to be a balance. So some of it goes to purses, but a majority of that really goes to charity. I mean, that's one thing unique about our sport, that all the net proceeds from every tournament go to charity. That's important to us. And then from, I think, from interest level, we are getting calls from a number of markets that, you know, have seen the growth and see what's happening with this tour and the depth of talent. And so there's some interest in a number of areas across the country that say, look, we'd like to talk about having an event, and how do we do that? So we're pursuing those discussions all the time.
A couple guys who earned their cards already for next year, Jason Gore and Carlos Ortiz, who won his third event last week, now has an automatic. He was number one on the money list for Web.com. Anyhow, they're both in the field this week. Jason has some problems with some clubs, so hopefully he'll get that ironed up. But what's the incentive for these guys who already have earned the 25 cards? What's the incentive for them to be playing in these four events?
Well, it's a big incentive because a little bit of a change this year. The 25 guys will carry their money into these final four events. So while they have assured of a PGA Tour card, their positioning of that card is still at stake. So if a guy's 25th, if he plays really well in the finals, he can add to his money and move up higher in that group. By the same token, if a guy that's first, Carlos Ortiz, he could still get caught, pretty unlikely, but if he doesn't play well and some guys close to him pass him, the higher you are in that order of those 25 cards, the more likely you are to get in more events on the PGA Tour. So not everybody gets in every event. So it's important that you're higher up on that list. So there's a lot at stake for those guys, as well as the 25 that are yet to be determined.
And I know this is one of the issues that you continually address with the PGA Tour, that the spots available at a tour event, especially early in the year and in the fall, make it difficult for some of these guys to get into events. I know you'd probably like to expand instead of just having 50 cards, maybe 75, but the guys you're getting maybe have trouble getting into events as it is.
That's true. I think what we saw last year with the split season, it created more pressure on eligibility. More of the PGA Tour members played additional events, which didn't allow players that were maybe down farther on the eligibility to get in. So, and that, again, trickled down to the Web.com Tour, so we saw more guys on the PGA Tour that didn't get in PGA Tour events would come to the Web.com Tour and play. So eligibility is a big concern, access on the PGA Tour for graduates that are graduating from here, but also access on the Web.com Tour for players. So we have made some changes over there. We've increased the sizes on the PGA Tour. We've added a fall event. So we think that'll help allow players to get in more, but we're still looking at how do we get more of our players in more events.
I know another thing that you and the PGA Tour wanted for this tour is a good mix of veteran players trying to get back to the tour, young guys playing along with them, seeing how they react, and you seem to have that working really well.
Yeah, we do. In fact, there are just so many good players now. When I look at the Web.com Tour, a lot of people like to think of it as minor league or developmental, and it's far from that. These guys, and that's why we changed the system. All the cards come through here, because what we know is when those players get to the PGA Tour, they're having impact immediately. They're winning, they're keeping their card, they're playing well, and there are just so many good players out there nowadays. And we've been looking at the ages of the players the last few years, and we definitely see that it's trending younger, which I don't know that that's good or bad, but it's certainly a lot of young players. I mean, you look at Carlos Ortiz, our leading money winner, over $500,000. He's just turning 23 years old, and a lot of those guys that got their 25 cards, young guys, 21, 22, 23, and it's great to see all these young players, and it's good to see some of the other guys like Jason that have been around a little bit, kind of find their game and get back to the PGA Tour.
You have kind of an international flavor to the tour now, with five of the first events this year played outside the continental United States. Do you see more of that in the future with the international opportunities, or will you expand more inside the U.S.?
I think we've probably pushed the envelope as much as we want to right now with the web.com tour and the events we play out there. It's a great opportunity early in the season when it's tougher to find markets in the U.S., but I think our focus now is we may look at another opportunity in Canada, but I think we're looking more at how do we develop a few more in the U.S.
This tour has had a number of sponsors over the years, Nationwide, Hogan, now Web.com. What's the status of a Web.com sponsorship, and how much longer is their deal, and what's the status going forward?
They're in the third year of a 10-year contract, so their business is good. Their business is growing. It's a great fit for them. You know, one of the things we mentioned earlier is, you know, it's a golf tournament here, but we are also doing other things. Web.com is doing their business summits for small to medium-sized businesses. They're doing it at all of our events, so it's a great opportunity for those businesses in the community to learn how to better utilize the Internet, so it's a great service that they're providing. But they're a solid company. They're a great partner. They've helped us with some sponsorships. They're helping us grow the tour, and they're as I said, they're on for 7 more years, and we'll see after that.
I think the purse size is average around $600,000, $800,000 per event. Do you see that growing? Do you feel there's a need for that to grow, or what's your thinking on that?
Well, we'd like to see the purses grow. I think, you know, part of our job as PGA Tour employees and executives, is, and my job, is to get as much financial benefit to our players as we can. At the same time, because we're so uniquely structured in sport, charity is a big part of what we do. So we need to balance, to strike a balance between, you know, what's the right size purse and the right investment for our sponsors, but at the same time, we want to create a model that works for charity and throws off a lot of charity, which then really positively impacts the community, not just our tournament week, but all year round.
Well, we at the Backline Report want to wish you guys a lot of success. We love your tournament, your structure, and the tour that you've got going, and think you're on the right path. And like I say, good luck going forward.
Thank you very much, and we'll look forward to seeing you maybe in Columbus.
Yeah, I will be there, absolutely.
You're going to have to drive a long way to go to Columbus, but how are you going to like?
I'm actually right in between. Well, I'm just a little bit farther to Columbus than I was to Fort Wayne, but
yeah.
Pretty easy to get to either place, actually.
Hey, now you have an interview. You had an interview with the leader, Carlos Ortiz, who won 3 times, set it up for us.
Yeah, well, you know, I tried to talk to him. I tried to catch him when he was in Columbus when he played in the Memorial, and we weren't able to make contact. But because you've been following him all year, Carlos, and been picking him to win that third tournament, I wanted to make sure I caught him. So he came in, and we sat down and talked, and we did the interview, and we sat there and talked for 15 minutes afterwards after I started stopped taping. He really a likable young guy. I really like this kid a lot. I hope he does well going forward, and we got some and really very interesting comments. Just like any golfer, during your round, you know, let's say you get a good round going, you make 4 or 5 pars in a row, or you throw in a couple birdies, and you go, oh, man, I got a good round going. All of a sudden, you start thinking about it, boom, the bogeys and the double bogeys start coming. He won those 2 tournaments early, and he started thinking, hey, I could really do something. I could get up to the PGA Tour here, and you know, he got ahead of himself and put the pressure on himself. And that's where he struggled all summer long, and he addresses that in this interview.
Hey, don't say the whole interview. Come on, let him say it. Let him say it. It's Carlos Ortiz.
We are here with Carlos Ortiz, who just wrapped up his third victory last week in Portland to earn an automatic exemption into the 2015 PGA Tour. He's going to play in the Web.com Tour Finals. To help improve his status going forward, but Carlos, fantastic year that you've had this first year out here on the Web.com Tour.
Thank you, Fred. Yeah, it's been a great year for me. I'm really happy with my results, and I'm really excited to start my next season on the PGA Tour.
$515,000 in earnings this year, 3 wins, 6 top tens, only 5 missed cuts. You were up and down just a little bit. You started out really hot early in the year, went through a rough patch in the middle, and then have played well at the end. Is this something we can expect from you in the future, a little bit up and down, or are, do you feel like you're a little bit more consistent and that will show as you get to know the courses a little bit better?
You know, I feel like I'm a really consistent player. It's just I'm adapting. It's a new process for me. I've never played professional before than this year, so I went to a rough patch more mentally than in my golf game, and I think I'm just learning, you know, and I'm going to keep learning the next few years, but I feel like I'm a more consistent player, and your guys are going to see it in the next few years.
So you started out hot, and then it kind of got in your head a little bit, oh, man, I'm really here. I could get this third win and jump up real quick, and so that kind of affected your play a little bit.
Yeah, I'm starting, you know, after I realized I could win out here, and, you know, about when I won the second time, I was playing great, and I was pretty close of winning that third time, and I got to a place where I got to the tournament with a lot of expectations, and when it didn't go my way, I kind of got frustrated really quick, and so it was hard to perform with that kind of pressure. So I've been working on that, and you know, I struggled a little bit in the middle of the year, and I was playing great the last, you know, last three, four tournaments, and things didn't go my way exactly until the last tournament that, you know, finally I went through, you know, I made the cut, and finally went through my, you know, that kind of block that I had in my mind, and it worked out, and I'm just really happy.
What do you feel is the strength of your game? What's the best part of your game?
I think I do everything pretty good. I think I drive the ball well. I'm a good iron player, and when I'm hot, I putt pretty good, and I have a good short game. So I think my strength is I do everything pretty decent.
Jack Nicklaus gave you a special exemption into the Memorial. We got to watch you play there a little bit. I think you were not feeling great on Friday. You had a tough round on Thursday. You played, you really got it around on Friday, made the cut on the number, ended up, you know, I think finishing down the leaderboard. But did you learn anything from that week? Was there anything that you picked up from that week that's maybe helped you later in the season?
You know, yeah, that's what about the time I was struggling in my mind, had a lot of expectations from my game, and I was thinking too much. So it's already hard enough, you know, playing golf without any pressure. You know, like, it's already enough pressure, the one, you know, that sport comes with, and I was putting extra pressure in my mind, so it was pretty hard to perform. And I think I learned, I mean, now that I look back at it, I think I learned that it's just, you need to come out every week and just try to do your best. If it goes your way, fine. If not, you're going to have a lot of tournaments to perform well. So I think I'm getting much better in that. And I'm pretty young, and I'm still learning, and I'm going to keep learning in the next few years.
That had to be pretty heady stuff, though, out on the range with the Phil Mickelsons and, the Matt Kuchers of the world and that kind of thing.
Yeah, but, you know, like, that also helped me realize that when you stand beside them, they don't do anything different than you. They're just players. There are names on the leaderboard, and I mean, if you play well, you're gonna beat them, and that's how it is. So it's just more that mentally you see them as who superheroes, and in reality, if you shoot under par, you're gonna have a good chance of beating them.
Well, Carlos, I have to tell you that we have followed you all year, and my co-host on the Back Nine Report, Carlos Torres, had predicted right away that you would win your third tournament and jump up to the PGA Tour. So you finally made him a true sage by winning your third event. He's been picking you every week.
I'm glad I could help him out with that pick. And, you know, I really thought I was going to get that third win too. And by the middle of the season, it kind of didn't look great for me. But, you know, I knew, and I started trusting myself and got back to the basics, where how I started. You know, I started playing great at the beginning of the season because I came to the tournament with no expectations and just to try to play good, and that's what I've been doing the last couple of weeks, and finally I came through last week. Everything started going my way, and that's what you do sometimes when you win.
Well, we certainly want to wish you a lot of success here the next few weeks in the Web.com Tour Finals, improve your status, and to get into events this fall and next year on the PGA Tour. And we're definitely going to be watching you going forward.
Thank you, yeah. It's going to be exciting, and I can't wait to start my PGA Tour season.
I am certainly glad that he also thought he was going to get that third win, because otherwise I wouldn't have been that sage that you mentioned there.
Yeah, he was, like I say, just a great kid. I mean, he is a stick. I mean, there is nothing to this kid. And he's only about 5'10 or something, you know. I don't think he weighs 160 pounds. And, you know, he hits it a long way, got a great swing, and hopefully, you know, he can do well next year. Really enjoyed talking to him.
Oh, he sounded like a very, very down-to-earth man there. So hopefully he has some great success, and he really learned from what he said, because he really had an awful tournament at the Hotel Fitness Championship. But he's not going to be this week in this tournament, so we'll see what happens with him moving forward. Hey, let's go now to the other one, to the other interview you had, and that's Jason Gore, the all-time winningest player there in the What.com Tour, Fred.
Yeah, I find Jason Gore very interesting. You know, I followed him for a long time. He had a tremendous year in 2005. Was one of the very first players to win three tournaments on the it was Nationwide Tour then, and get the automatic promotion up to the PGA Tour. Was in the final group with Retief Goosen at the 2005 U.S. Open at Pinehurst. Really played poorly that day, but still just played with a lot of enthusiasm. You could see he enjoyed it. He was playing for the moment. And then he went on to win the 84 Lumber Classic later that summer. So had a great year 2005. Expected really good things from him. He played okay the next couple years. And 2008, 2009, just things started going sideways. Had to deal with some shoulder injury. Had to have some surgery. And all of a sudden, he just kind of lost his love for the game. It became a business rather than a game, and had to kind of find his way back. So we talk about that a little bit.
Well, here's the interview with 7-time Web.com Tour winner Jason Gore.
We're here today with Jason Gore at the Hotel Fitness Championship in Fort Wayne, Indiana. It's the first stop on the Web.com Tour Final Series. And Jason, thanks a lot for sitting down and talking to us today.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, you you had a pretty good year this year. You played 14 events on the Web.com Tour. You had 6 top tens. You finished the year strong with 3 top tens in your last 4 events to finish in the top 25, earn your card for next year. And you also played a few events on the PGA Tour, 7 events. You had a top 10, a couple top 25s. All in all, pretty solid year.
Yeah, it was a good year. It was a good starting year. I went through some major swing changes last year, and they kind of finally started coming to fruition this year, and I started to feel comfortable, and my love for the game came back.
Talk about the love for the game. You had you won the Battlefield promotion. We saw Carlos Ortiz wrap that up last week with his 3 wins this year. You were one of the early guys to do that, jump up to the PGA Tour, I think, in 2005. You won an event on the PGA Tour in 2005. You had the great U.S. Open that year, played in the final group at Pinehurst. I know you had a little problem with some injury and have kind of struggled getting back.
Yeah, I mean, I had shoulder surgery in 2009 or 2010. I don't know. I don't remember what I had for breakfast this morning, so it's good. But, I mostly mentally struggled. I lost my love for the game. And I mean, it wasn't that I wasn't working hard at it, because I still was, but I always played golf as golf was always something I loved to do. It never was a business to me, and it sort of turned into a business, it's not the way I'm built. And I've always loved it. I've always had a smile on my face doing it. I feel like I'm the luckiest guy in the world. And when I started to turn into being more work, it didn't mean the same to me. And so I went through some swing changes last year with Mac O'Grady and a guy named Drew Steckel, who's now coaching me, and really started to hit a lot of good shots. I didn't not love playing golf. I hated playing bad golf. So I didn't hate playing golf. I just hated playing bad golf. So everything's kind of working out. I changed my attitude. I just started to love it and started to realize that I was still pretty good at this game. And, you know, and I didn't know that for a long time. And so.
Is there one particular thing that turned it around, or is it just something that kind of built with the confidence of working with the different changes?
Well, I applied for the Pepperdine coaching job about a year and a half ago, I think is what it was. We were trying to remember last night. And I didn't get it. So I was a little upset at the time, and little hurt by it, but turned out to be a blessing in disguise. You know, God works in mysterious ways, and that was the greatest move the guy ever made, probably. And I just kind of it. I'm just like, you know what? I'm unemployable, so I can't do a real job. So I better go do what I love to do, and that was play golf, and recommitted myself, and just started to realize that. Just started to watch the good shots instead of focusing on the bad shots, and
take the positive all the way.
Exactly, and you know, realize that I'm gonna make mistakes and we're gonna hit bad shots. And I think over the years I was just trying to be way too perfect, something that I wasn't. And you know, and I was always kind of a little bit of a hot dog. You know, like I always like to hit the shot like, hey, watch this, you know, kind of deal. But I kind of been like, oh gosh, look away so I don't screw up, you know. But the one thing I always heard was that Arnold Palmer was never embarrassed to miss a 4-foot putt, and I got embarrassed when I hit bad shots. And you know, you can't be, not in this game, it's too humbling. So take the good with the bad and go from there, and I'm just enjoying the intricacies of a great game.
You know, I think that's an excellent point for all of our listeners that are amateur hacks out there. We all want to be perfect. We hit that one great shot, and then our mind lies to us and tells us we can do it every time. And it's just not going to happen. It doesn't even happen for the best players in the game.
No, not at all. It's you know, it's in most cases you're trying to hit a round ball with a round swing, and you know, sometimes even with the driver with a round face outside, and you're trying to make it go straight. I mean, physics-wise, it's impossible. And for some reason, we just constantly bang our head into a wall trying to do it. But, you know, that's why they make fairways 30, 40 yards wide. And that's why they make holes three times the size of the golf ball. So I think most importantly, just go have fun. It's a great game. And that's what I started to do again.
Well, Jason, we certainly want to wish you all the best. I expect we'll see you in some fall events this fall as the tour. You're going to play in the tour finals, all the events this fall?
Most likely, yeah. I don't know if I'm going to play next week or not. I may not play this week. I don't have any golf clubs yet. So, and it's Wednesday afternoon right now. But I don't know. I've played 12 out of 13 weeks. So, and I'm 40 now. You know, things don't add up real well anymore. But we'll see. You know, I just went home for a day to see my kids and missed them. We just moved into a new place and we spent two nights there. Hadn't even seen it. My wife's been there for a month. My family's been there for a month and haven't seen it. But so I might take off next week. I think last week's finish in Portland kind of gave me the luxury to take a week off and still be okay. So, but when I'm out here, I'm going to do my best to finally get a W.
Well, like I said, we certainly want to wish you all the best. And thanks so much for sitting and talking to us for a minute.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Was Jason Gore, and he doesn't really know what he's going to be doing next tonight. So let's see if we can get him next time, and he'll know what to do.
No, you know, we talk about all the time, Carlos, but you know, we see these guys getting the big checks, and you know, hanging around with movie stars and all that stuff. But you know, they have families. You know, they have personal lives, and. You know, just like you said, he'd been out there 12. He'd been on the road 12 of the last 13 weeks. Hadn't been home. You know, it's just it's a grind, man. And to get back to where he wants to get to, he had to put in the work. And what a name from a blast from the past, Mac O'Grady. You know, you talk about a mystic golf guru. He went to see Mac to get straightened out. So. I just think he's got a wonderful story. And one of the, I just thought it made one of the great quotes of all time. You know, Arnold Palmer was never embarrassed to miss a 4-foot putt. How many times you go out to play and you're embarrassed to go play with somebody because they don't want you don't want them to see your game. You know, we all face the same thing. You know, even those guys, the best players in the world, they're all, you know, we're all the same. That's all a problem for everybody.
That reminds me of what Carlos Ortiz was saying earlier about, hey, they're just players. They just do the same shots. They play the same ball. So, hey, they're just humans like everybody else. They just happen to play better.
That's right.
Hey,
Let's take a short break, and when we come back, let's start quick recaps of the remaining action this weekend. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our quick recaps on the remaining tour tournaments this weekend. Let's start with the European Tour, the 71 Degrees Open d'Italia, presented by Damiani, where Henny Otto, he fired a final round for under 68, and he held off David Howell and Stephen Gallagher on Sunday during a two-shot victory there at the Italian Open. Stephen Gallagher needed either a first or second place finish in order to qualify automatically for the European Ryder Cup team. Exploded out of the gate to get within striking distance, but he couldn't make it up, so he finished there third. Just Lloyden also went low at 7-under 65 and finished tied for fourth at 16-under, joined there by Richie Ramsey, who was in the final pairing with Otto. Bernd Wiesberger, first round co-leader with 2006 champion Francesco Molinari, shot an even par 72 on Sunday to finish well off the base. 13-under, Molinari also finished tied at 18th at 9-under. Then talking now about the LPGA Tour, the Portland Classic presented by Cambia Health Solutions. Austin Ernst made a par on the first play of hole on Sunday to defeat three-time LPGA Tour winner I.K. Kim and win the Portland Classic for her first LPGA Tour win. Ernst closed with a 5-under 67, ended at 14-under par. Kim posted a 4-under to join Ernst at minus 14. Chela Choi and Soyoung Ryu share third place at minus 12. Karine Kerr fired a 6-under 66 on Sunday. She ended alongside with Nayeon Choi, who's playing great again. Imi G and Lina Vidal in fifth place at 11-under. Mi Hung Her, the 2009 winner, shared the third-round leader with two-time winners Suzanne Peterson and Carlota Seganda. So Ernest collected $195,000 for her first tour win. And the counterpart of the LPGA, but in the European Tour, the Ladies European Tour had the Aberdeen Asset Management Ladies Scottish Open presented by Event Scotland, where veteran Trish Johnson, she caught her final round 1-over-73 on Sunday, but it was good enough to give her a two-shot victory at the Ladies Scottish Open, something she might not like to hear, but it's the reality. She's 48 years old and became the oldest winner ever on the Ladies European Tour. Despite her second straight round in the 70s, she finished the week at 7-under to claim the title at Archer Field Links. This is the first win on the tour this year for her and her third top 10 finish this season. Her best finish of the year had been at an 8th place finish at the Lala Maiden Cup. Larissa Nocera ended up in sole possession of second place at 5-under. Rebecca Artis, the Australian, Stephanie Na, and Sally Watson finished three shots back at 4-under. Wow. And Lisa Caudal, the French woman, is playing great, and look out for her. She was the only player to finish under par at minus 2. Also, now talking back on the Champions Tour with the Shaw Shattuck Classic, Freddie Couples, boom, boom, he fired a course record 61 in the final round on Sunday. Then birdie is the first play of hole to beat Billy Andrade to win the Shaw Shattuck Classic. Andrade had a chance for a birdie in the playoff, but it slid by the left edge, and he had close with an 8-under 62 to meet Couples there at 15-under. Joe Daly, who was one of the three players tied for the lead, entering the final round, shared third place at 13-under with Steve Lowry. West Shore Jr. grabbed fifth place at 12-under after closing with a 64. Woody Austin was one stroke back, while Joe Duran and Bob Tway, the other two second-round co-leaders, faltered there to finish and slide into a 19th at minus 7. Tway struggled to 400 and dropped down into a tie for 27th. Moving on now to the counterpart of the Champions Tour, but in the European Senior Tour, the Travis Perkins Master, where Colin Montgomery, he continues his tour de force there. Of course, Bernhard Langer is not playing there. He finished off his third round in the 60s with a 67 on Sunday, coasted to a comfortable 10-shot victory to win his second straight Travis Perkins Masters. Monty, who set the record for winning margin at this event last year, coming out on top by 6 shots, he eclipsed his own record after finishing at 12-under, winning by 10. Last year's win at this event was Monty's first on the European Senior Tour. He has since won 2 more times, making this his 4th on tour. And that same stroke victory means he became the first player to earn more than 500,000 euros in a single season on the Senior Tour, while it's just his 9th Senior Tour appearance, setting a new record as the quickest player to win 4 times. Gordon Mason, Tim Thelen, and Andre Bosser were the next closest to Monty at 2 under, while Peter Fowler and Mike Cunningham were the only other players to finish under par. And finally, also on the Challenge Tour, Joachim Lagergren there on the Northern Ireland Open Challenge in association with Maui Jim Sunglasses. He started the day with a 6-stroke lead, stumbled to a 1-over par on Sunday, but it was enough to give him the title. He finished at 13-under. It was his first victory on the European Challenge Tour. Andre Bernadette par the final 9 holes to post 5-under-66. He took second at 12-under. Bernd Rittenhammer also shot 66. He shared 3rd place at 11-under with Jerome Lando Casanova, the Frenchman that's playing great. Kenny Ferry, Stephen Brown, Charlie Ford, and Brendan Stone finished tied for 5th at 10-under. Kieran, we haven't forgotten about you. Your thoughts on the other tournaments this weekend?
I must quickly say, I've just remembered I'm still on the show. I've enjoyed that break. I went and made a cup of tea. I went to the toilet. I took the dog for a walk, had a nap, but I'm back now.
TMI.
Firstly,
too
you're
much information.
What's that?
Too much information.
Too much information.
Oh, I apologize. I could have got more graphic, but I decided not to. But, but yeah, European Tour, you know, Henny Otto, that was a great championship, the Italian Open this year. Obviously, a lot riding on it for Stephen Gallagher. And even Francesco Molinari, the home favorite playing on his home golf club in Turin, if he won that event, maybe he could have gotten to the reckoning for a Ryder Cup pick. But for Henny Otto, you know, he shot 62 on Friday, kind of pulled him clear of the field. And the weekend, he had to fight tremendously. You know, his game was not that convincing in the final 2 days. He had real trouble with the hooks. Everything was going left off the tee every single time. But he got a lot of good breaks, and he made the most of it. He made some tremendous up and downs. His putting was excellent, and he showed a lot of character to get that victory. And fairly well-deserved, very emotional win for him. And you see the emotion in his face after he pulled the winning putt. And a great battling performance. You know, he set the foundations on Friday with a 62, but in a way, he actually won with his B game in the final 2 days. He did not play particularly well from tee to green, but he just got the job done, and that's, I've got to respect that and appreciate how good that was. But David Hull, you know, a guy that came back to form last year, won the Dunhill Links, beat Peter Uihlein in a playoff there at St Andrews, and he shot fire on a 63, played tremendously well, and you'll finish second there, and that should get him into the final series events coming up. So a big boost for him there. Former Ryder Cup player, of course. And there were Ryder Cup, obviously, ramifications in the week for Stephen Gallagher, who could have finished, you know, first or second, would have seen him automatically qualify for the European Ryder Cup team. David Hill was the one that could have ended that. Gallagher finished 1 shot behind him at 12-under. But it was a stunning performance. He showed great courage. It was thrilling. Actually, after 9 holes on Friday, Gallagher was outside the cut line. And he came back on Friday at a back nine of 30. And on Sunday, he shot 30 on the front nine. You know, 2 absolutely thrilling nines of golf right there. And it showed Paul McGinley why he should have been a Ryder Cup pick and why he got the pick in the end today. But for Jos Lauten as well, a player who we look at could be a future Ryder Cup player. And, he played a fantastic season. And he shot 65 on Sunday, finishing a tie for 4th. Perhaps someone who, had he won, then maybe he would have gotten to Paul McGinley's mindset as well, as with Francesco Molinari, who is obviously a 2-time Ryder Cup player himself. He started with 66 on Thursday, looked to perhaps maybe gone ahead of Gallagher in that race for the Ryder Cup pick, but in the end, you know, he stalled after that frustrating weekend in the greens for Francesco. But for Henny Otto, a fantastic victory there, and gets him into the final series events this year, so he's going to be in the World Tour Championship at the end of the season in Dubai, so fantastic for him. And over on the senior tour, well, it was fantastic, of course, for everyone's best friend, the guy that I stalk around Perth every week, Colin Montgomery. I know where he gets his haircut, by the way. And he had a 10-shot win, which is actually the second biggest victory of his career, 1989 Portuguese Open, his first win on the European Tour. He won by 11 shots. But, you know, it's a great performance from him. And, you know, 12 under, just 3 bogeys for the week on that golf course. And it's not an easy track, the Woburn course of the Dukes. It's, you know, almost 7,000 yards. It's tree-lined. It's tight. So you have to be really on your game there to score well. And he played tremendously. Continues a great form he's had since he's turned 50. And that will only continue in the coming weeks and months. And here's a stat for you. The British Masters used to be contested at Woburn for 20 years. And back in 1999, Colin Montgomery lost there. He finished second to an American player by the name of Bob May, who, of course, you'll remember for the PGA Championship in 2000. But Bob May actually beat Monty at the British Masters back in 1999 at Woburn. But a great win for Monty there. And the Challenge Tour, you know, Joachim Lagergren, you know, remarkable stuff, really, because, you know, 62 on Thursday, 72 on Sunday, birdied the last to win by one. But it's come out of nowhere. I look at this guy's results in the official World Golf Ranking website. He hadn't posted a top 10 finish anywhere in over 2 years. Quite remarkable. And he was tied 17th last year in Russia, and that was his best finish in that time. He's now 35th in the money list in the the Challenge Tour, and only the top 15 qualify for the European Tour next season. So Lagergren has to have a really win again, I think, at least to have a chance of getting that. Here's a name for you as well. Kenneth Ferry, Englishman, finished tied for 5th. In the Challenge Tour there. And he, in Northern Ireland, and he, of course, finished tied for 6th back in the US Open at Wingfoot in 2006. A guy who was really playing well at that time, won the European Open and stuff like that. But since then, the game has proved very difficult for him, but he's going to be finding his way back now. And over in the Archer Shield, Lady Scottish Open, close to me, Trish Johnson, what a story there. Her 19th win in the Ladies European Tour, age of 48, oldest winner on the European Ladies Tour. And, you know, her opening round was remarkable. 8-time Solheim Cup player, a 66 in some really blisteringly windy conditions there at Archer Field. It was the best in the field by 5 or 6 shots. Tremendous performance from her. And maybe it's another Solheim Cup in her, you never know. And Gladys and Sarah, runner-up there. She won the Scottish Open at the Carrick in 2008. And the defending champion, Katrina Matthews, finished in tie for 13th. She's won 2 of the last 3 years at Archer Field. So, Carlos, some really good events in Europe, and I'll pass over to Fred now to give us a recap of the American ones.
How about that, Fred?
Yeah, just a couple comments. Number one, on the LPGA Tour, Austin Ernst, just in her second year, won there in Portland. 23 starts in her rookie season last year. She had just 2 top tens, earned $142,000, finished number 72 on the LPGA Tour money list. The $195,000 first-place check from Portland moves her to number 31 in the race to CME Globe this season and number 32 on the money list. Her best finish prior to this win this year was a T18 at Kings Mill back in May. She got started early. She had 3 birdies and an eagle on the front 9 for a 531. She had 2 more birdies on the back before the pressure became too great to bear. She had a 2-shot lead with just 2 holes to play, but made bogeys of both 17 and 18, left her leader in the clubhouse at 14 under par. Then she had to wait for IK Kim and So Young Ru to finish, who were both tied with her when she signed her card. Kim was able to par out and tie, but Ru kind of ran into some problems there at the last was not able to made a double bogey, was not able to get it in. She ended up tied for 3rd with Chela Choi. Chela Choi had the great bounce back after last week when she withdrew over a disagreement over a rules finding or a violation from a caller. Ernst, while she was on, the last 2 holes, she pulled her drive bad left. She got some advice on her cell phone from her father while she was waiting on the putting green about her alignment. She went to the driving range, worked on that, and was able to come out and win the playoff. Defending champion Suzanne Pedersen was tied after 54 holes, but she struggled with a final round 73 and fell down to T16. Top-ranked player in the world, Stacey Lewis, took a much-needed rest this week, will return in 2 weeks for the final women's major championship, the Evian Championship. And the other thing, Freddie Couples kind of lit up the crowd. He chipped in for an eagle at his last hole and got his second win of the year on the Champions Tour at the Shaw Charity Classic in Calgary, Alberta. Couples set a course record 9 under par 61 in the final round on Sunday to catch the leaders and force a playoff with Billy Andrade. He made two eagles on the back nine after firing a 3 under par 32 on the front nine. He posted eagle, birdie, birdie at numbers 11 through 13, and then that chip-in eagle at the last gave him the 6 under par 29. Andrade was not able to beat Couples in the playoff. Couples, of course, as we know, was forced to take some time off earlier in the year with that back issues. This win moves him back up to number 6 in the Charles Schwab Cup. He would be right up to the top there with Langer and Montgomery and those guys if he wouldn't have had to take a month or so off. Of course, Langer continues to lead the Charles Schwab Cup. There's just 6 events remaining on the Champions Tour before the season-ending Charles Schwab Cup Championship. So the old guys are going to stay north of the border this week for the Quebec Championship, where Esteban Toledo, who's been on the show, will defend.
That's our recaps for this weekend's action. So let's now go to our previews for the upcoming weekend, and let's start with the PGA Tour and the BMW Championship, which is one of the oldest tournaments on the PGA Tour schedule, is taking form this week with the 111th edition. Only the British Open and U.S. Opens have an older history than this event, which was formerly known as the Western Open before. This is the third week of the FedEx Cup playoffs. Hunter Mahan won the Barclays, and Chris Kirk captured the Deutsche Bank Championship. Kirk leads the FedEx Cup playoff points list, while Rory McIlroy is second and Mahan is third. The field this week is reduced to the top 70 players on the points list. Dustin Johnson is the only player that qualified that is not playing this week. World's number one, McIlroy finished T5 last week and now has 4 top 5 finishes in his last five events, including those famous 3 consecutive wins at the British Open, WGC Bridgestone, and PGA Championship. Chris Kirk will look to keep things rolling after winning the Deutsche Bank Championship and jumping to number one in the FedEx Cup playoffs on Monday. So McIlroy will be there. Mahan, who won the Barclays, will be there also in the field this week after falling to number 3 in the standings following that 64th place finish on Monday. Sergio Garcia, Justin Rose, and G-Mac will also be back after skipping the Deutsche Bank Championship for various reasons. So, Fred, how about the BMW Championship, third leg of the PGA Tour FedEx Cup playoffs?
Well, you know, they're getting down to the end of this thing. You know, as we talked about earlier, they're going to be there's 70 players in the field this week. Then they're going to cut down to 30. Cherry Hills, of course, has a storied history. You know, it's where Arnold Palmer made the big run to win the U.S. Open over Jack Nicklaus, and of course Ben Hogan was involved in that back in I think it was 1961. Yeah, you know, $8 million purse, 1.4 to the winner. I know, you know, Zach Johnson has won this thing, but you know, it's the FedEx Cup playoffs. I mean, every week is big, and they're trying to get to the next week, and then they're all looking for that $10 million first place check after Eastlake in 2 weeks. So. It's a time of the year when they're grinding it out. They're all tired. They've played a lot of golf in the last 10 weeks since the Open Championship, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. So it's fun to watch who's gonna. You want to watch this week who's around that number 30 and what they do down those last 3 or 4 or 5 holes to try and get themselves into that. Some guys will try some shots they normally wouldn't try. Kind of makes for good TV.
Kieran, how about the BMW Championship this weekend?
Well, you know, as you guys know, I'm a bit of a golf history sort of buff, and I love looking back at the history of the game. And you mentioned there, Carlos, about the old Western Open, which was really kind of a major championship of its own back in the 20s and 30s when guys like Walter Hagen were dominating. It was kind of seen as being a major before the Masters became part of the game and so on, and before really majors were actually part of the game at all. We didn't really have the major championship sort of in our head until the 1960s, really. But certainly Cherry Hill, as Fred said there, a course of a storied history. You go back to many major championships over the years. You know, at 1938 US Open won by Ralph Goldall was here, 41 PGA, 78 US Open, and the 85 PGA Championship. But, of course, the 1960 US Open is the one that stands out the most, one of the classic major championships, one of the ones you wish you were there to see. Almost, imagine if Twitter was around for the 1960 US Open, it would be incredible. You know, Arnold Palmer rushing through six birdies in his opening seven holes, front nine of 30, shooting final round of 65, to win by two shots from a 20-year-old amateur by the name of Jack Nicklaus. Now goes Ben Hogan, 47-year-old at that point. He was in contention as well. He was actually tied for the lead on the 71st tee, but he finished bogey, triple bogey, to miss out and lose out on a chance to win a final US Open. So one of the great major championships there in the past, so a golf course I'm looking very much forward to seeing. And Phil Mickelson, you mentioned Phil Mickelson, he won the US Amateurs back at Cherry Hills in 1990, so a good place for him as well to go back to. So it's a place of a lot of history, and a golf course I saw 2 years ago for the US Amateur, but it's not a golf course I know too much about, so I'm looking forward to seeing it. And obviously we're getting down to the nitty-gritty, the business end of the FedEx Cup season, so it should be exciting. But for Cherry Hills, it's a golf course I'm looking forward to experiencing for the first time, really, in this kind of level of the game.
Let's go now to a quick preview of the remaining tournaments this weekend. Let's start with the European Tour that is now in Switzerland this week for the Omega European Masters, with the best players on the European Tour competing in the U.S. here at the PGA Tour at the FedEx Cup Playoffs. Only three players ranking the top 30 in the world are in the field: Victor Dubuisson, defending champion Thomas Bjorn, and Jimmy Donaldson. Dubuisson, Bjorn, and Donaldson, as you all know, will be on the European team that will be competing against the U.S. at the Ryder Cup later this month. Bjorn will try to win his third title if the beard lets him and become the first back-to-back winner of this event since Seve Ballesteros. Bjorn will be joined there by a plethora of past winners, including Richie Ramsey, Miguel Angel Jimenez, Brett Rumford, Bradley Dredge, Robert Carlson, and many others. Bjorn is playing well yet again, even though he has that beard that he doesn't want to shave, at least Hunter Mahan did, finishing in the top 10 seven times, including a victory there at the NetBank Golf Challenge in December. The Champions Tour is going to stay in Canada this week for the Quebec City Championship. Five of the top 10 players on the money list are in the field: Jay Haas, Jeff Sluman, Michael Allen, Gene Sauer, and Kirk Triplett. Esteban Toledo, a friend of the show, won for the second time on the Champions Tour when he defeated Kenny Perry in the third playoff hole last year. He will attempt to defend his title as he is in the field this week. But Perry, this year's Regions Traditions champion, will not participate. Bernhard Langer and Colin Montgomery, each of whom have won two of the other four major championships this season, will also be taking the week off. On the European Senior Tour, Colin Montgomery, he continues his record-breaking campaign and Tour de Force there at the European Senior Tour, now in Moscow this weekend for the Russian Open Golf Senior. So he will be bidding to capture a fourth victory on the 2014 year. Of course, Bernhard Langer is not there, so that's why he went there and he said, okay, Bernhard, you can take the U.S. I'll take Europe. I'll just demolish everybody there. So he's coming fresh from successfully defending his title in the Travis Perkins Masters on Sunday. The double senior major champion will be looking to improve in his tied fourth place finish last year in this tournament and continue his red-hot form that he's been in the summer. Also on the field this week is last year order married winner Paul Westling, former European number one Ronan Rafferty, and a trio of tournament winners from the current campaign: Mark Davis, Santiago Luna, and Cesar Monasterio. The Web.com Tour, the Chiquita Classic, is set to host the second leg of the Web.com Tour Finals this week. This is the second of four events, at the end of which 25 players will earn or keep the PGA Tour cards for the 2014-15 season. Bob Cauley, last week's winner, sits at top of the priority rankings, and he headlines this week field along with Andrew Putnam, who's number two on the tour's monolith. But the monolith leader, Carlos Ortiz, is not in the field this week. The field also includes 2008 Masters champion Trevor Immelman, along with other PGA Tour winners, Jonathan Bird, Chad Campbell, Ben Curtis, Tim Herron, J.J. Henry, Sean O'Hare, and John Rowland. So it's going to be very interesting, that second leg of the Web.com Tour Finals. Also on the Challenge Tour, Jerome Lando Casanova, the Frenchman, he's relishing a return to his home country as he's in the informed player there from France as he arrives after two consecutive top 10 finishes, including his T3rd last week. His form has come just at the right times. Only six events remain before the season-ending Dubai Festival City Challenge Tour Grand Final, hosted by Albania Golf Club, where the top 15 players in their rankings will graduate to the European Tour. Jake Roos continues his chase for a third title and an automatic graduation to the European Tour, and the South African hopes to emulate the achievement of the German Moritz Lampert, who already did it. Finally, the Ladies European Tour is Rebecca Ortiz from Australia returning to the Vasatorp Golf Club to defend her title at the Helsingborg Open in Sweden. She has had two top 10 finishes so far this year on the Symetra Tour, and last year she finished with her highest order of merit finish at 16th place. She'll be a contender this week trying to defend. One very interesting fact is that there is a 13-year-old Swede, Julia Engstrom, in the field this week playing alongside her compatriots Caroline Hedwall, Pernilla Lindberg, and 2015 Europe Solheim top team captain Karen Cook. Julia comes in after wins at the Finnish Junior International Championship and the Scandia Tour Elite Girls, so I'm eager to see how she handles this event. Other notables there, we have to look from the youngest to the most veteran in Lara Davis and last week's winner Trish Johnson, as well as teenage phenom Charlie Hall, the other Aussies besides Ortiz, Nikki Campbell, Nikki Garrett, Frenchwoman Gladys Nocera, and Liz Caudal. So all of them are there for the Helsingborg Open. Look out, great tournament there in Sweden. So, Fred, take first shot at all those tournaments.
Yeah, only thing I'll comment on is the, of course, the web.com. We talked a little bit about that, the third leg. They're playing at the River Run Country Club. It's a par 72, 7,300 yards. Davidson, North Carolina. Course was open in 2008. Andrew Svoboda won down there last year. $1 million purse with $180,000 going to the winner. But more importantly, they're trying to get those priority points for the starting on the PGA Tour next year and getting those last 25 cards are being issued. You mentioned Carlos Ortiz is not on the field this week. He was really tired. He said he'd played, I think, 14 weeks in a row or something like that, and he needed some time off. So he doesn't feel anybody can catch him if he just plays decent the last couple weeks, and he'll maintain his number one spot. The other tournament, the Quebec tournament on the Champions Tour, it is a par 72. Can be stretched to 7,200 yards. They won't play it that long. It is on Golf Channel if you want to watch it. Tempata Golf Club in Quebec City. As we mentioned, Esteban Toledo is a defending champion. $1.6 million total purse, $240,000 going to the winner. So a lot of good golf. The women are off this week. They're going to be ready, getting ready for the last major, the Evian, next week.
Karen, how about your thoughts on the previews for this remaining tourist tournaments this weekend?
Well, Carlos, I'm mindful of the time, so I'll only comment on the European Tour event at Crans-sur-Sierre. But first, I love that you mentioned Thomas Bjorn's beard. And here's a question for you both. I wonder if Paul McGinley can count Thomas Bjorn's beard as actually being another player on the team. Perhaps the beard's the 13th man on the team. Maybe Thomas Bjorn can go partner his own beard and take on an American duo. You never know. But a formidable duo there. But yes, Thomas Bjorn, obviously, defending champion, won there twice in the last 3 years at Crans-sur-Sierre, one of the most spectacular places in the world. It's a remarkable setting. high in the mountains of the Swiss Alps, and it's not the world's greatest golf course, it has to be said, but in terms of a setting, there are none better in professional golf, I have to say. And a wonderful location where some stars have lived there in the past as well. Sir Roger Moore, former James Bond, he used to have a property up there, as did one of the great beauties of all time, Sophia Loren. So there's a couple of big names there that used to stay up at Crans-sur-Sierre. But a fantastic location, a great event, and Miguel Angel Jimenez there, a guy that's played 25 years, I think, in a row now up there. He loves the place so much, and a location he enjoys, and a golf course he enjoys as well. He won there back in 2010. So a decent field there. Donaldson, DeBuisson are both in the field, as well as Bjorn, of course, three Ryder Cup players right there. So trying to see those guys even getting some form going into the Ryder Cup and maintain their good play. But Crans-sur-Sierre, you know, it's worth watching just for the setting. It's breathtaking. And with a lot of guys on the European Tour, we're trying to get into that top half of the race to Dubai money list, to get into the final series events, top six to get into that. And, of course, guys trying to retain their cards, top 110 retain their cards in the European Tour. And the season is, of course, drawing to a close now for the regular season. So it's pressure's on for these guys. But Crans-sur-Sierre, a lot of pressure for guys, but a very relaxing setting. And it should be a great watch.
That wraps up our previews for this weekend's action. We're going to take a very short break. When we come back, we're going to try to play at least a par 3 news here for you. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
Back, and now we're going to try to fit in some news for you on the par 5 news. Let's see if we can play all 5 shots. But let's start with Kieran. Kieran, tell us something about Royal Portrush.
Indeed, Carlos, and the wonderful Brian Keogh of the Irish Golf Desk reported on Sunday that the members at Royal Portrush, of course in Northern Ireland, which had been invited by the RNA to make its long-awaited return to the Open Championship Rota. It was last once in the Open Rota back in 1951, where Max Faulkner won. But the club there has now voted to accept that invitation and to approve changes to the golf course that will be made due to host the golf's oldest major championship, potentially for 2019, so 5 years from now. 237 members actually attended the meeting there on Friday evening, with just two of them objecting to the proposals on offer. So there's two members at Royal Portrush didn't want the Open Championship to come back there. So I want to know who those two radicals were, but let's wait and see. But and, of course, there are two golf courses at Portrush, with the Dunluce Links being one of the most highly regarded in the world. That's the golf course with the championship golf course there. But there's also the Valley Course as well. And two new holes will have been proposed for the Dunluce, but they will most likely not be built until the winter of 2016, so 2 years from now. And changes are also planned for the Sister Valley course, with the RNA's architect, Martin Ebert, opening an exhibition, actually, in the clubhouse a few weeks ago in order to give the members an idea of what the changes would be, show them what the course looked like after the changes. And so the Open Championship, you know, it's going to return to Portrush one day. It may be in 5 years' time, and it will definitely happen now. The membership have approved it. Always seemed likely, but now the formalities are now completed. So the Open Championship will be going back to Portrush at some point. You know, it's 5 years' time. It's something to look forward to. Guys like Rory McIlroy and Darren Clark, you know, Northern Irishmen, they'll be loving that Graham at Dell as well. To go back to Portrush and Northern Ireland will be an absolute fantastic event for them, and, of course, Northern Ireland. And even for the Open Championship, Portrush is a fantastic golf course, and it will be a fantastic venue for the Open Championship when it goes back there, potentially in 5 years' time. And, Fred, I believe you have some news from Los Angeles.
Yeah, the ultra-exclusive Los Angeles Country Club and the United States Golf Association reached a preliminary agreement to stage the U.S. Open at the course in 2023. That'll be the first time the national championship will be held in L.A. since Ben Hogan won the event at Riviera in 1948. And, you know, L.A. is such a big market. Seems funny that that they haven't been out there. Several steps remain before the deal is completed. The club's board of directors voted to move forward with the negotiations with the USGA on Wednesday night in a letter calling for a vote of the club's 1,500 members. That vote would be completed sometime in October, and assuming it's favorable, the club and the USGA would work to sign a deal perhaps by the beginning of next year. You know, you talk to a lot of people and to rate their courses they want to play, and Los Angeles Country Club comes up on that bucket list fairly high. You know, maybe the USGA, maybe the U.S. Open is going to get back to L.A. By 2023.
Well, I have something about the Liberty National Golf Course in New Jersey that has been chosen as the venue for the 2017 President's Cup. That's what the PGA Tour said on Tuesday. The course, which opened back in 2006, is located along the Hudson River in Jersey City and offers views of the Statue of Liberty, Ellis Island, and the Manhattan skyline. Great, great setting. I prefer the Switzerland one that Kieran was talking about. The PGA Tour said the President's Cup is part of a 25-year agreement with the course, which could bring up to 10 events to the venue. The President's Cup, a team match play event, is held every other year and pits the United States against a very powerful international team made up of players from outside Europe and the United States. The President's Cup has come so far in its relative short history, and it's seen the world's best players compete in this market of this incredibly fantastic venue with such an amazing backdrop in 2017 is something fans of this great game will never forget. That's what PGA Tour Commissioner Tim Fincham said. Liberty National hosted the Barclays PGA Tour event, part of the FedEx Cup playoffs back in 2009 and in last year's 2013. So the 2015 President's Cup will be held in October at the Jack Nicklaus Golf Club in Hinchin, South Korea. And now, you know, we'll be back in three years more for the Liberty National Golf Course in New Jersey. So, Kieran, tell me something about money, and this time about little money that was spent somewhere.
Oh, well, I know, Carlos, and it comes back to everyone's favorite billionaire, everyone's favorite guy with the comb-over. In fact, the comb-over is actually real hair. He did the Ice Bucket Challenge. This is Donald Trump here. Donald Trump did the Ice Bucket Challenge the other week.
And
it turns out his
hair
is actually real. Who would believe it?
Did you see the hair in the conference? In the PGA conference? Did you see the head?
He's right in the front row.
I did see him there, yeah. I saw him there. What was he doing there? But he was there, I know. But, yeah, you know, Donald Trump, you know, his hair is actually real. Why on earth he has it that way then, I have no idea. But anyway, he was back in the news once again for business reasons this time, not his hair or anything else. And it was revealed that he actually bought the outstanding Dunbeg Resort in County Clare, Ireland, earlier this year for an apparent bargain price of just €8.7 million. He bought that back in February in the resort in Ireland. And it had actually been originally speculated that Donald Trump, who also purchased the Timber Resort, of course, in Scotland this year, has spent €15 million on Dunbeg, but he was able to add it to his ever-growing portfolio of golf resorts for a reduced price. €28 million had actually been spent on the resort in its original development before it opened in 2002. And the sale to Donald Trump included the five-star hotel lodge, seven unsold suites. The other suites are actually belonging to investors who put money into the resort at the time, and also a Greg Norman Design Championship golf course. And Donald has pledged to spend €45 million into the resort, creating hundreds of jobs in the process. And he's actually also rebranded the Dunbeg Resort as Trump International Golf Links and Hotel Ireland. Absolutely delightful. And Fred, I believe I heard that Bill Clinton was giving Roy McIlroy relationship advice.
Oh, man. Trump likes to put his name on everything, doesn't he? What's wrong with Trump Dunbeg or Dunbeg? You know, why Trump International? Oh, my God. Okay. You got to love that over there. I'm sure you do. Hey,
I just say my Bill Clinton comment was better than you made it out to be. That was funny.
I know. That was good, yeah. I'm not going to touch it. I'm not even going there.
I'm full for it.
having the Reuters had a story last week or that Rory took a couple days after the Barclays and had a little sit down with Bubba Clinton in Sag Harbor in New York. It was a cool afternoon, Rory said. He told reporters, anytime you get a chance to spend some time with a person like that, the stories he can tell, I bet he can tell some stories, and the life experience that he's had, he's just a great man to listen to. He's obviously a huge golf fan, so we talked a lot about golf, and I'll bet they talked about some other stuff too. We talked about really interesting. It's almost like you get a lifetime sort of education on that stuff you don't already know. I take a lot out of those sorts of experiences. So yeah, Rory got a chance to rub elbows with the former president, and I'm sure he got some relationship advice from Bubba. So, Carlos, you're going to talk a little bit about an offer that Justin Leonard got that he just couldn't refuse.
He just couldn't refuse. You know, he ordinarily would have played the final week of the PGA Tour's regular season, and this is one time he probably should have gone. He likes the Wyndham Championship and typically plays well, having never missed a cut. And at 108 in the FedEx Cup, it would have been his last chance to improve his standing heading into the playoffs, where it's all about moving up the list and advancing to the next week. But then he got an offer he couldn't refuse. His wife and four kids had spent a week in Colorado the last previous 2 years at Camp Matthew, where children with cancer and their families are afforded a brief escape from the emotional, physical, and financial strain of coping with cancer. Leonard had been involved in fundraising, though his golf schedule always kept him from going. And he said that last summer his kids came back and said, "Dad, you've got to go with us." Leonard couldn't recall, other than play Disney, when his children, ages 4, 8, and 9, and 10, wanted him to do something, anything this badly. He called it the best trip this summer. He returned to work last week, having slipped 3 weeks ago, having slipped to number 115 in the FedEx Cup, and he then missed the cut at the Barclays to end his season earlier than he would have wanted. He played the Wyndham Championship. He might have still been among the top 100 who advanced there outside Boston this week, but that was irrelevant because this was important to him. Over the years, he and his wife Amanda have quietly gone about their involvement in charity. From those seven President Cup and the Ryder Cup teams he played that he had a charitable component, he has shared the wealth. He has channeled his donations to the Texas Scottish Rite Hospital and for Children and to Camp Esperanza, to the Visiting Nurse Association, and to the Ark House, to the Les Turner ALS Foundation, and to Hope Farm H. They stumble into Camp Marty, even without looking, courtesy of a peculiar chain of events. Jean-Marie Alpert came up with the idea for families who have a child with cancer to spend a fun week together. She cared for her mother, after whom the camp is named, for 14 years until she died of cancer. 1 year, Alpert went to the Young Lives Trail West Family Camp in Buena Vista, Colorado, with a group of Dallas families and loved it. As her mind wandered during the long drive home to Dallas, she was moved to do something for families torn apart by cancer. She raised the money that she could, tried to seek out families that might be interested, and effectively went to the camp for last week. So a birthday party changed everything, and that's where Justin Leonard really changed his schedule to go there, and he really has never forgotten it. So we have to commend Justin Leonard for that great gesture. Fred, any final comments? We have a couple of minutes to go right now before we close the show.
Yeah, I had a whole bunch of stuff on Ryder Cup we never got to, and we're going to have to do that again. But I want to see Ricky Fowler, Rory McIlroy singles, last match out or first match, I don't care. I just want to see that as a singles match at the Ryder Cup.
Kieran, we have 45 seconds.
Well, and, you know, obviously, so much talk about the Ryder Cup. We do like a 2-hour show, I think, on the Ryder Cup. But so much debate, so much conjecture over these picks and the way the teams look now. But obviously now the teams are set, all 24 players are in position. Only 23 days to go now to the Ryder Cup begins. Just down the road from me, I actually went past the Eagles the other day. I saw the grandstands and the hospitality tents being up. It's a fantastic infrastructure. It looks tremendous. It's going to be a fantastic setting. And even though people are predicting rain and horrible weather, the weather in Perthshire, I can tell you, gentlemen, was actually very nice today. So maybe the Ryder Cup will be sunny. You never know.
Thank you, everyone. Enjoy the weekend. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.